from Directions Magazine. This is Directions on the News for Tuesday, January 28th, 2014. Each week, this podcast looks at news and trends related to all things location. This is Adina Schutzberg, Executive Editor in Somerville, Massachusetts.
And this is Joe Francica at the Geodesign Summit in Redlands, California.
It turns out that the most read story in the New York Times in 2013 was not a story at all, but an interactive map series. And it was an interactive map series that provided a personalized dialect map for each visitor. What was it about that map that made it so popular? And what can we as GIS users learn from the Times offering? We'll share our thoughts after a word from our sponsor.
Directions Magazine is pleased to invite you to the 2014 Location Intelligence Conference, May 19th through the 21st, at the Walter E. Washington Convention Center in Washington, D.C. This is the 10th year of the event, which now includes the technology summits for users of Oracle Spatial, HERE, a Nokia business unit, and the Eclipse Foundation's Location Tech Working Group. This multi-track event is an excellent opportunity to network with colleagues on location analytics, open source technology, mobile location services, and geospatial big data. More information can be found at www.locationintelligence.net.
So if you didn't get to play with the interactive map series, here's how it worked. After you answer a series of questions about different terms that you use for various actions and objects in the world, you're presented with a personal dialect map, which identifies regions in the United States where people use the same terms that you do. And from most accounts that I saw on Facebook and Twitter and elsewhere, it did a really good job of identifying people's home location, that's typically where they grew up, which is where they sort of learned English and used the terms that they use. And I have to say, when I went through this little quiz and map series, it was spot on. They nailed it for me.
Yeah, when I played with it, it was remarkably accurate, probably within 30 miles of identifying. In fact, I took the quiz twice and was a little surprised that it presented me with slightly different questions the second time around. No difference in the result, but I was amazed at the accuracy of the quiz.
Yeah, so definitely worth the 5 or 10 minutes to go through this. But what we really want to focus on today is, what was it that made this interactive map series so successful, so popular, and so interesting? And what is it that we can learn as people who make maps and use maps as we try to have more people take advantage of maps? So, Joe, what do you think the New York Times did right that made this so engaging?
Well, as pointed out by Diane Sinton, I think what made it extremely engaging was the fact that it was about you. It was all about this engagement of taking you back to where you lived if you didn't currently live in a place where you grew up. And the questions asked you very personal responses, for which you really wanted to see the outcome. But I think, as importantly, the quiz gave you immediate feedback, or said a different way, immediate gratification in the presentation of a map. And the other thing I think they did right was, in that graphic presentation, we understood that we were looking at a picture of the USA. After you answer the question. And I guess I would render an opinion that anybody who was a non-geographer taking the poll on a more local level probably couldn't identify the shape or geographic extents of their city or their county or any other politically defined boundary, but they could at least distinguish the shape of the United States. So just to recap, gave you immediate feedback, and then the graphic presentation of the USA, I thought, kind of solidified the connection between the person taking the poll and the results of the poll.
Okay, well, let me go back to the immediate gratification. And I think it's really important. I think they asked you 25 questions. And after each question, you're presented with a map of how your response sort of mapped against everybody else's. So you got this little thumbnail map. And you're right. That was immediately interesting because you'd answer the question and you'd quickly look at what the map looked like, who answered like you did and who didn't, and then you move on to the next question.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that I think is interesting is you were using the word poll, and the New York Times didn't introduce this as a map. They introduced it as a quiz.
Mm.
right?
Yeah.
Which has a certain connotation. It has a connotation like of school on one side. And at the other side, which I think is more appropriate here, it's those quizzes that you take in magazines that tell you about yourself.
Right,
you know?
Right.
And that has sort of a fun entertainment sort of quality. And I think they introduced this just by the title as here's a fun thing you can do. Without saying, oh, and by the way, there's some educational stuff in there, you know, kind of like we do with children,
yeah.
But it works well with adults as well.
Yeah, absolutely, right.
Somebody was thinking in terms of how they wanted to present this and attract people to it. So one of the things that this quiz and map series did that I don't think we do well enough in some situations where we put together online maps is it provided that immediate context. And as you pointed out, that's because it was all about the individual, their responses, created this map, it talked about their home geography. So I guess what I want to suggest we can do is think about how to provide more guidance when we put up one of these maps that can help people find the context or find the corner of the map that's going to really appeal to them. And that could be as simple as, and I've seen this done, when there is a U.S. map, or before you get to the U.S. map, it asks you, what state are you interested in? So instead of looking at the entire United States, you zero in on Massachusetts or Alabama or Colorado. So you're immediately much more engaged than a whole national map, for example. So I think this idea of sort of hand-holding and guidance is really helpful. And tied to that is the idea that this map was really simple in the sense of when you got to the final map, how many buttons could you push? Did you notice that?
Yeah, it's just two, right? It was what was relevant to you and what was the furthest thing that was not like you.
Right, so by default you got areas that were similar to you, these three cities that are sort of closest, they identified as being closest to where you grew up that are most similar to you, and then you could hit one button and it would show you the opposite of that,
right.
If you like. Places that were most different from you, which for me were in Mississippi, if I remember correctly. So really simple. Not 1,000 buttons, no layers, no mention of the word thematic or choropleth, didn't have any of that. And I think that's part of what made this so accessible to so many people.
Do you think that the representation of the heat map was a good choice to represent the responses?
Yes, I think it worked great. I think people are familiar with heat maps. You made the point that the exact boundaries of the states and the cities really didn't matter in this
right.
particular situation. It was a really simple way to quickly get you that immediate feedback. Easy to interpret, and then go on to the next question.
Right. At first, I was a little confused, but certainly a continuous surface heat map is a good way to display probability. I think if you had tried to do fixed political boundaries, it would not be as effective.
Now, it had this really simple legend, right? There was this,
right.
this bar with the colors, and it said most similar, least similar.
Right. Right.
No numbers, very intuitive. Again, a really smart choice here.
Yeah, the only problem I had, again, with the color variations was I wanted to see how I was strongly or not as strongly affiliated with that region. I got there, but I wonder how many other people had any problems.
Well, and here's the thing. Every time you answered a question, you looked at another map with that same visualization, with the same legend.
True, and you got to learn. It was a learning curve, a little bit of a learn.
It really was. So when you got to that final map, you were like an expert in
yes.
that heat map, right?
Absolutely, right.
So again, building step by step, learning each time you looked at the map. So by the end, you were a pro. And not only were you a pro, but you wanted to share it with the world, and there were, of course, tools to do that. You could
mm-hmm.
put it out on Facebook and Twitter. And I think I first saw this on Facebook. And, again, get people excited about it. Get them sharing it. Send it viral. And not in the viral in the sense of kiddie videos, but, wow, this is really important to me. Look at me. This is all about me and where I grew up.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right.
So also really well done. And you rarely see that. I think in other media maps, whether they're talking about health or economics or policy or anything. And I think we need more of that.
Yeah, I think it would. The regional variations would help to give people a different perspective. I think you don't realize just how much variation there is regionally, and even in areas very close to you.
So the final question I want to ask is, how do we move forward with this? And here's my suggestion. I want to challenge GIS companies, academics, media companies, to have a session at your next meeting, conference, webinar, whatever, called How to Make Sticky Maps. And by that I mean, how do you get people truly engaged with your maps, just like the New York Times did? And as we've discussed, it's a whole series of things, everything from cartography to the interface to what you name it to how you describe it. I think there's a whole bunch of factors here. And putting together sort of a best practices list would just be a huge benefit to industry for sure, but just to, you know, getting the word out about geography and the value of maps.
I think on the flip side, not from the vendor side, but from the people who are actually using web mapping technology to interface with the public, that there's a lot of takeaways here for them as well. You know, what is it that they have to do to engage the public? Do they just stick up a web map with a map of their county or their city, whatever it is, or do they try to turn it into something where they're acquiring information from the public, or whether they're turning a map into an app? One of the suggestions I think that came out of here is that this wasn't an article, it was a true app in a sense. And I think that the people who are actually creating public-facing web maps have a lot to take away from this.
Well, that's all the time we have for today.
From us here at Directions Magazine, we'd like to remind you that January 31st is the deadline for submitting a presentation to our Location Intelligence Conference 2014. For more information, you can go to www.locationintelligence.net. And remember, this year, all government employees are granted free access to Location Intelligence.
If you'd like to comment on today's podcast, you can send us an email at editors@directionsmag.com. You can send us a tweet at directionsmag, or you can leave a message where this podcast is posted at Directions Magazine. Thanks for joining us, and be sure to tell a friend.